My name is Josh Mastillo, chairperson of the committee. I'm representing the Northwest Province as a permanent deputy. Thank you. I'll hand over to Nemedi Madlala to introduce. We start with Member Chair. Honorable Member, thank you. Over to you.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Maggie Madlala, and we will be coming in from Poland.
How is Mazuro from Helsing?
Tolo, this is my name. My name is Tolo, my name is JP, I'm in Houston and Umar.
Thank you. Then we've got special delegates from the provinces. Can you introduce the honorable members?
Good morning. My name is Rayola Mpomar.
Good morning, my name is Louisa Jackson, and I'm from the United States of South Africa, representing the same thing. Yes, you
Thank you, Sir President. My name is Jerry Wojcin. I'm a parliamentary officer.
My name is Jerry Kanakenda. I'm the committee director.
My name is Tetona. Yeah, my name is Penny.
My name is Emilia. I'm from Angola. I work for Oxfam.
Women.
Obrigado.
Morning, Madam Chair. My name is Patrick McLaughlin. I'm a correspondent and a monitor server for British Chamber, American Chamber, and Cabinet Online.
Hello. My name is Rose Sawaya. I work for Oxfam as the regional gender advisor for Southern Africa. I'm here on a learning visit.
Thank you very much. From the trade worker, I'm calling for the trade worker.
I'm looking for the trade worker.
I'm not a member. My name is Maria Bakunsan. My name is Maria.
My name is Nina. I'm a PMG, a computer technologist.
Morning, Chair. My name is Gurulia Bolinson Sana, Parliamentary Legal Advisor, on Senior Legal for Advocates of Batman of Bhutan. Okay, thank you.
Good morning, members. My name is Manoli Sinkoku. I work for the FCO, the Office of the Security Ministry.
My name is Mujib Musafi from the Department of Health.
Thank you very much. At least you need.
My name is Johan Kasha. I'm a parliamentary liaison officer from the Minister of Health.
Thank you very much. We see you every week for the platform there and to keep coming. Thank you very much. Honorable members, department and our guests, we've got two bills in front of us. We are going to get briefing from the Department of Health on choice of termination of pregnancy amendment bill and personal health bill. These bills were sent back by to us through the Constitutional Court. They were not clear as things taken from you. The only thing that was concerned to the Constitutional Court was the process of public hearing to the provinces. Some done the public hearing, some they didn't do it enough. Now, we're going to get briefing, but we request the provinces. After we have briefed the maximum delivery to do a public hearing, getting assistance. Because there are no new things in this bill, in the original bill, the one is amendment, the one is the original. So we want the department to take us that and brief us. And I hope everybody is ready to recognize from the department. They will take us through. And from there, we have some comments, clarifications, and questions. We are now going to start with the... The top bill copies are not enough. Now we start with the traditional health, traditional act. Number 35 of 2004 from and then we go to the next one. I hope you see Alba. Let me hand over to the department. Even the regulations, I think that the same regulations we had in our previous meeting, because nothing has changed. The only addition we are doing is more public hearings to provinces, because those bills are Section 76. Thank you very much. Over to you. Well, let me just welcome the week of the committee. From Honorable Comrade Sinema, member of the committee. Thank you, Madam Chair. The briefing, I'm trying to elaborate as much as possible so that he can, because it's a long time, so that he can make sure that we're not part of the discussion last time. I hope the other people bear with me. If they are bored, then they will stay with me. Are you also going to brief us a little bit about the background of the
Yes, I can.
The handout that has been given out have reference to this presentation. Starting with the introduction, the legislation which regulates the traditional health practitioners in South Africa began with public hearing of 1998, in which the Portfolio Committee on Health and the Select Committee of the NCOP made the following recommendation. Firstly, there should be legal recognition of traditional healers as a health record. Let an interim council be established to regulate traditional healing. That the interim council can report back to Parliament within 3 years after which a permanent council would be constituted. Let a forum of traditional healers be set up before council is formed to do the following. Firstly, to ensure that all stakeholders and associations are taken on board and to unpack the complicated matter of training and accreditation, as well as to formulate a clear proposal. Also, that traditional healing remains part of the private healthcare sector at this stage, and the proposed categories of healers to be overseen by the Interim Council should include the following. Inyanga, which is a herbalist or traditional doctor. Sangoma, which is a diviner. Traditional birth attendant, or a relay, and traditional servant, in baby. Faith healers, or the so-called abatandazi, were excluded because they are not traditional in nature. Their training and accreditation would be difficult. The interim traditional health practitioner council will determine which seven categories are included at a later stage once the council becomes functional. The proposed functions of the interim council were as follows. Registration of all qualifying traditional healers, promotion of training, research and professionalism in the sector, developing an ethical code of conduct, and maintaining discipline within the profession. Setting up norms and standards with regard to the practice of traditional healing, including regulating the issuing of medical certificates and health levels. Facilitate cooperation among traditional healers, medical professionals, and the government. Research and creation of a database, and regulating anything incidental to traditional healing practice. And ladies and gentlemen, I must emphasize here that we are referring to traditional healing insofar as the Republic of South Africa is concerned. Just
to give a synopsis of the consultative process implemented by the National Department of Health, the following was done. The first workshop was organized by the Department of Health in Pretoria, and this was in 1999. All the nine provinces were represented by four traditional healers each. The four health professional councils, namely the South African Nursing Council, the Health Professions Council of South Africa, the South African Pharmacy Council, and the Allied Health Professions Council of South Africa made presentations regarding their organizational structures as well as financial matters. Again, here it was an effort of just showing the traditional health practitioners that were present how it is done. Now, all councils committed themselves to sharing information which would assist in the establishment of the traditional healers' council. A second workshop was held in February 2001. Now, the objectives of the second workshop were as follows. Firstly, to highlight issues that were raised at the 1998 public hearing, to report back on the progress made by the National Department of Health, taking the process forward following MINMET, which was MINMET then, now it's called the National Health Council, and the MINMET meeting in September 2000, which endorsed the establishment of the Interim Council for Traditional Healers. Setting up of a forum which would have an input in the drafting of the bill by the National Department of Health. The traditional healers organizations represented at that second workshop were as follows. The Interim Coordinating Committee for Traditional Medical Practitioners, the so-called ICC, the South African Traditional Healers Federation, Traditional Healers of South Africa, Professional Traditional Healers Register of South Africa, Traditional Medical Practitioners and Spiritual Healers Organization. The composition of the forum agreed upon, nine traditional healers were nominated by the Traditional Healer Provincial Representative, five were nominated by the National Department of Health, and then the total of the forum of traditional healers is 14. The role of the National Department of Health in the development of the bill. Now, the National Department of Health conducted provincial roadshows to inform traditional healers and other stakeholders about the contents of the bill. The department also presented to the Portfolio Committee in September 2002, published the bill on the 11th April 2003 for a period of 3 months for public comment. Various inputs were made by a number of organizations. Amongst other inputs, that is from the public comment. The Allied Health Professions Council of South Africa did make input. The Eastern Cape Provincial Traditional Health Practitioners made input. Free State Traditional Practitioners Forum. The Gauteng Traditional Health Practitioners Forum. The Institute for Democracy in South Africa, IDASA, also made input. The KwaZulu-Natal Traditional Health Practitioners Forum. The Northern Cape Traditional Practitioners Forum. The Traditional Healers Organization, South African Medical Association, Spiritual Healers Group, and ladies and gentlemen, this actually illustrates that already there is a lot of organization in so far as the traditional healers in the country, in a variety of organizations which would actually make up something like a professional organization. Now, the tabling of the bill in Parliament. Public hearings were conducted by the Portfolio Committee on Health in August 2004. The bill was tabled and accepted by the National Assembly on the 9th September 2004.
was debated in Parliament in November 2004 and let me say it on time. The bill was signed by the President on the 11th February 2005 as the Traditional Health Practitioner Act, which is Act No. 35 of 2004, Government Gazette No. 27275. The President then proclaimed certain sections of the Act, including the establishment of the Interim Council. Section 7 of the Act, which is Act No. 35 of 2004, empowered the Minister to appoint members of the Council in the prescribed manner, that is, in accordance with pertinent regulations. The Act establishes the Interim Traditional Health Practitioners Council of South Africa. The regulations for the appointment by the Minister of members of the Interim Council were published in July 2006, Government Gazette No. 29084. The process for appointment of members into the Interim Council is determined in the Act and laid out in the Government Gazette No. 29087. The address for nomination of members were actually published on a number of newspapers on the 6th, 7th, and 8th August 2006. And the launch of the Interim Council was projected for the 31st August 2006. Then came the ruling of the Constitutional Court of South Africa on the Traditional Health Practitioners Act. Now, on the 17th August 2006, the Constitutional Court handed down judgment in an application by Doctors for Life based on the argument that there was insufficient public involvement when the bill with three adults was passed. The Traditional Health Practitioners Act, therefore, was declared invalid and a period of 18 months was given by the Constitutional Court during which the due consultative process could be done. Now, activities following the parliamentary debate on the Act. The Department of Health, therefore, brought to a halt all activities related to implementation of the Act, particularly the establishment of the Interim Traditional Health Practitioners Council and the nomination process. Ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, I need to indicate here that people have actually been nominated and the department actually sits with a number of nominations. I don't know how valid they are by now, but we can only proceed once this moratorium is lifted by the Constitutional Court. The regulations relating to the appointment by the Minister as member of the Interim Traditional and Practitioners Council has been published on the 23rd December 2005 and are 1247. The Interim Council will be constituted according to the provisions of the Act and the regulations. So that's why we had to make sure that the regulations were in place so that start the council soon after August. The Interim Council will consist of 22 members appointed by the Minister in the following manner: a chairperson who will be a traditional health practitioner appointed by the Minister, the vice chairperson elected by members of the council amongst themselves, 9 traditional health practitioners, one from each province, with more than 5 years of practice as a traditional health practitioner, 1 employee of the Department of Health, 1 appointed on account of knowledge of law, 1 medical practitioner who is a member of the Health Professions Council of South Africa, 1 pharmacist who is a member of the South African Pharmacy Council, 3 community representatives, and 1 representative from each category of traditional health practitioners defined in the Act, which are herbalists, diviners, traditional birth attendants, and traditional surgeons. Just briefly to brief resume of the Act. The Act is comprised of the following.
Chapter 1, definition, purpose of the Act, application of the Act. Chapter 2, establishment and governance of the Traditional Health Practitioners Council. Chapter 3 relates to the functions of the registrar, the staff, and registration procedure. Chapter 4 deals with disciplinary inquiries and investigations by council. And Chapter 5 deals with general and supplementary procedures. The main purpose of the Act was to establish the Interim Traditional Health Practitioners Council of South Africa, thus regulating the profession of traditional healing in the country. To provide for the registration, training, and practice of traditional health practitioners in the Republic of South Africa, and to serve and protect the interests of members of the public who use the services of traditional health practitioners. The application of the Act applies to traditional health practitioners in the Republic and traditional health practitioners and students engaged in or learning traditional health practice in the Republic. Honorable Chair, this concludes a brief summary of what the Act was all about.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. This is not new briefing by the department to the committee. It's just to remind us where to come from about this bill. And thank you very much for the valuable information and giving the processes done by the department of the reproduction of the bill. I'm not going to take this opportunity. Honorable member, to come up with questions, and we go. Honorable Chair Solo.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I don't think that much that we want to improve on the field in the sense that we had an opportunity to actually see the field in the second bite. But I just want to find out from the department whether they are already in the process of implementing the bill when the procedural court made the rules. Now, in their process of implementing the bill, do they not find any lacuna, for instance, that is want to be strengthened in the bill? Number two, I just want to remind myself, or to be reminded by the department, but to let me emphasize that we're talking here about the traditional healers in the Republic of South Africa. There are lots and lots of traditional healers who come from some other countries in this country. When you go to any town, you find objects like a traditional healer from Kenya, for instance, or a traditional healer from Tanzania, and it looks like from Uganda or whatever. And it looks like that, there's a very lucrative practice in South Africa nowadays. And what's our view about the rules that we have covered here? Do they have to pass certain tests before they can actually practice in South Africa? Accreditation. Are they to be accredited or accredited or what's the situation? Those are the only two issues that I want to
address. Thank you very much. Also to welcome
Mrs.
Giladasi. And Honorable Chair, thank you. Any other comments or
questions?
Honorable member,
please thank you. Yes, thank you, Madam. Thank you. You bear with me because I was not part of the first time. But then I just want to make a understanding that the help of the information and the information of the council. Just to check as to how then they. Is there any agreed upon regulation that will their mandate, which can be if there is any, how then that mandate will be tested if one directs the work under my understanding is that the council represents the public. And then therefore if they are then taken, if a person is then taking this report of any way. The Act, how that will be tested in the country.
things. This is point taken. May you respond if there are no other people. You want to ask?
Yes, I forgot. Also, there was two men watching the TV report mentioning something of nominees that are already there. I'm not sure how they are then, but I think the process was identified if I did not have them being back on when the process is set aside and nominating process is not supposed to start.
No, we are only dealing with the court ruling of constitutional court. The party intensified because everything went well except the party participation. But let me give the department some response on this one.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. To respond to the question with regard to the process of implementation, I would say a lot of groundwork had already been done, amongst others, securing the premises where the offices would be, arranging the necessary funding to kickstart the formation of the council for the initial 2 to 3 years, and of course, the nomination process. We had to stop abruptly because honorable members would remember that we had just advertised and the constitutional ruling came just a few days after the closing date for the nomination process. So the instruction from the Director General was that we halt the whole process to respect the constitutional court ruling. We held onto the document and we will have to start off with the workshop once we have to resume the function just to get the feeling of what is the right. And of course our legal division will also give the necessary input. We did not leave the premises yet pending the beginning of the council. And then with reference to the act relating to South African citizens only, yes, the decision that was taken was that the act shall be binding and legal for the South African citizens. However, like all other professions, there would be regulations that deal with foreign individuals who want to ply their trade in the Republic of South Africa. Same as we have a foreign health work policy that governs all the other health professionals, it would have to be tailored to suit the specific conditions that relate to traditional illness. In the debate, what came out very clearly was that it would be very difficult for a South African traditional health practitioner to evaluate the training that happened in another country where the cultural system is not appropriately understood by the South African individual. So that is one of the major functions that the council would have to perform once they have been put in place. Regarding the question from the Honorable Member from the Eastern Cape, regarding the formation of the council, I'm sure the Honorable Member would note that we are looking at a council that has got 32 people. This happened at a time when the department was in the process of transformation and streamlining of all health professional councils. So this one came, it was opportune that it happened at that particular time. So the number was 22 to start off with, but the council would obviously have some options to co-opt special task team with specific knowledge if the need arose. But the whole idea was that we no longer in the country want to have councils that exceed 30 people in number. With regard to dealings with people who break the law, insofar as the Traditional Health Practitioners Act is concerned, there is a whole chapter 5 actually details the various sanctions that can be implemented in cases of the breach of the law. The whole emphasis is on regulating traditional healing so that people conform to certain norms and standards. And of course, the main objective being to protect the public of the Republic of South Africa. The last one, I think the Honorable Chair responded with regard to regulations if they are still valid. I think it needs to be quite a lot of work to deal with. Hoping that the people that were nominated are still around, still in practice, etc., etc. There's a lot of work that needs to be done in that regard. Thank you very much.
Thank you
very much.
Yeah. Before follow-up,
responding to one of the issues that Honorable Member Tolo raised, that is in the implementation of the bill, if we found any loopholes, as it were. There is one loophole that we identify that in the process, in reprocessing this bill, would like Parliament to deal with. It relates to the establishment of the Council itself. In terms of the Act, the Minister must, after consultation with the Council, make regulations relating to, inter alia, the constitution of the Council. So it's a question of chicken and egg situation where the Minister will have to make regulations, and those regulations will not be valid unless the Minister has consulted with Council, whereas those regulations are trying to establish the Council itself. So we have gone through those regulations, and there is a thought in the interpretation text that allows the minister to do that. But I think it will be most opportune for us to include a section in the act that empowers the minister to make regulations that establish the council without necessarily consulting with the council, because there will be no council.
Yeah.
So we will be including a clause to that effect. And with regard to the issue of accreditation, in section 6, one of the functions of the Council will be to approve minimum requirements pertaining to education and training and all other issues relating to the practice of traditional health practitioners. So we are intending to establish, not necessarily establish, but we are intending to give the responsibility of accreditation of education and training and the practice of traditional health to the Council itself, so that they are recognized in terms of the SAPA as an accreditation body of what traditional health practice is all about in SAPA. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, Chairperson, just maybe two issues and follow up on the issue that has just been responded to. The first one, Chair, I just want to get a sense from the department on exactly what does the court mean when it talks about insufficient consultation or public participation. You know, I think that is quite important to assist us to take the process forward. And maybe also to have a sense, who was cited as respondents in the case by these Doctors for Life? Was it the chairperson of the NCOP? And who else, and who else? You know? I think it's quite important that we have a sense of that, because my reading is that there hasn't been any identified witnesses in terms of that consultative process at the level of the National Assembly process, unless, you know, I got this thing wrong. The second question, chairperson, would be, I don't know, substantive, you know, and content issues that are anticipated to be challenged, you know, by these interest groups, Doctors for Life in particular, in relation to the BIP, from the point of view of the department. I think those are the issues. Then I'll share the other one, Chairperson, for you.
What's the difference between the faith healers and the spiritual healers? Are you going to add some more amendments to this thing? Maybe I didn't understand what you were saying about the application, about the education and other amendments that you mentioned in the audience, because I thought this the only question was the application.
Thanks, Jefferson. Maybe starting with your question. The only amendment that we will be requesting Parliament to invite will relate to that one of empowering the minister to make regulations without consulting the council. That is the regulation that will be established in the council. I think that will be the only one so far that we have made an issue. Yes. And relating to Honourable Thomas' questions, Jefferson, people that were cited as the parties that were cited as respondents were Parliament, that is both houses of Parliament, the Department of Health, all nine provincial speakers. That is the Speaker of Parliament, nine provincial speakers, the Department of Health. Those were the respondents. The Department of Health was primarily cited as a respondent because they are interested parties. And relating to the issue of insufficient consultation or facilitation of public involvement, what, to the best of my knowledge, what the court, Constitutional Court said was that of all the provinces, only three did facilitate public involvement. And there is a lengthy explanation in the judgment itself. Unfortunately, I have not prepared, I have not got the judgment, the whole judgment here. Maybe the legal advisor will also ask you. But what they meant was that by public facilitation, the NCOP had to invite people or interested parties to make representations, either orally or written. It will depend on what the NCOP one, they must facilitate that public involvement, ensure that people make their representation, and those representations are considered, duly considered by the NCOP and the provinces themselves. Maybe I also need to make a distinction between the NCOP and the provinces in a fight the Constitutional Court judgment. The judgment said that in the provinces, I think that the problem was mainly with the provinces in facilitating public involvement, because the NCOP decided that since this is the Section 76 bill, then the provinces must be involved. So in facilitating that public involvement, I think the judge wanted to say that the NCOP should have instructed the provinces to ensure that they invite people to make representations either orally or in written format. So in that regard, then those provinces would consider their representation and then forward whatever recommendations that they have from those representations to the NCOP for the NCOP to finally deal with those representations. So the judge then said that he has identified the fact that process was exceeded by the provinces because he has expressly stated that six of the nine provinces did not invite or consider public representation. I'm not sure if I have adequately responded to that question. Maybe the legal advisor will also add to that question.
Just a follow-up, Chair. When should we go to it?
Follow-up question?
Just Cat person, why I'm interested in the parties that are cited, you know, if we remember very well, you know, very, very well, we'll recall that this deal was fast tracked. You know, that's why, that's one of the reasons why other provinces could not undertake public hearings. And I'm not trying to evoke no controversial sentiments here, but the point is, it should have, you know, been structured or, you know, imposed a particular lesson on the department, you know, and the executive in particular, around this issue of frustrating vis-a-vis the nature of the thing, because it is a fact that it was frustrated. I remember it was not even on our schedule. We had to pass it in Mpange. Because it was, in Mpange, it was in Natal. We were there when we passed the bill. Because it was suspect, in our view, we were saying that, no, look, this is a substantive bill. It has elicited, you know, public, huge public interest and blah, 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 blah. But it was suspect. So I'm just making a comment, drawing your attention as the extension of the executive to that particular issue. So I think it's important, and I'm happy that the provinces were cited, even the NCOP.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to clarify my mind. This is just additional health practitioner's job. Now, so your advisors must assist us now. Does this bill also go to the health practitioner leaders or not? Because I want us to be 100% sure what we have to do. Thank you, Chair. Yeah, well, given the fact that some issues were cited and also the National Council of Provinces were cited as correspondents, in the view of the state law advisors at the department, will public hearings that will take place in the provinces, we can't instruct them to do so, but we can only persuade the provinces to hold public hearings. But if public hearings are held only in the province and not in the NCOP, will that suffice? Would that be, you know, enough for to respond to the view of the Constitutional Court? Or do you want to have a situation where we have provinces holding public hearings and only the public hearings held at the level of the NCOP? What's the idea? What is it? We want to close all that so that it does not come back and, you know, where we shall expect another loophole. You know,
thank you very much, my point is that if provinces construct this public hearing and they come up with new issues, then what will happen? Because in my understanding, the only concern of the court is the participation, public participation. But it may come with new issues. That's when I think we have to be advised of our major advice.
Thanks, Professor. What if new issues are raised in public hearings and will public hearings in provinces be sufficient? I will also add on to the point by the state right now.
Thank you for your attention. The one of the parliament to do with the statute that has been confirmed by the constitution for the discretion of power. But it's also very clear on the issue that there is also a right of participation by the electorate. And that participation has to be facilitated in the provinces. And that's where the court has identified that there was insufficient time, I think, in some of the instances for the provinces to conduct the consultation processes in the various provinces. And the court has identified various means in which they can conduct the participatory process and consultation. I think the court made mention of roadshows and of inviting people to attend on various public meetings and so on to discuss the relevant issues relating to the bill. So those are the issues that were discussed at the Constitutional Court and was also mentioned by the judges of the Constitutional Court. And the thing is also that the court took into account that the chairperson of the NCAP at the time has made mention of the fact that the court or that the provinces must consult properly in the provinces. That was mentioned in the Constitutional Court judgment, if I recall correctly. And chairperson, yes, if there are certain issues that come out of the provincial meetings and deliberations, those issues would obviously be taken up by the various delegates and be taken to the forum here for discussion and for deliberation by the various members of this committee. And then also, if I'm correct, the parliamentary law advisor is also here to just help us with the process. The committee is empowered then to also call on submissions from participants to have clarity on the issues, should the committee so wish. But if the chairperson would allow also just the parliamentary law advisor to just assist us with that process as well. But it's, as I say, it's a discretionary power that's granted to the committee to rule its own processes, to conduct the meetings in its own manner and form as provided for in the rules of parliament. And the court has made a ruling on that and has indicated that the participatory process was just insufficient, that there was not sufficient consultation with the electorate. With regard to the question relating to the referral of the bill to the traditional council, that is correct. There are some issues that must be discussed, and I think it's also mentioned in the memorandum on the object that is attached to people where the parliamentary procedure is set up on page 27 of the set book. Thank you, Chair.
Can I make a follow-up
question? Thank you very much. Yes, but this opportunity to address the issue of public participation on the provinces. I think it's quite nice we also mentioned the fact that the NCOP itself must also conduct public hearings and also the various provinces must also do their own public hearings. It would not be suffice for the NCOP to not leave it to the province.
Okay.
Yes,
the parliamentary local advisors covered me because this thing is not something that is just taken somewhere or such up because it is required by the constitution. There are various sections which say that, for instance, the National Assembly, section 59, calls that it must, and it must, because if there is a mandatory requirement, it must be done, that they must participate publicly in its processes and its committees must follow the same. With the NCOP, section 72, it's the same, written in the same language, that it must conduct public hearings. The same with the provinces. Section 118 also requires them to conduct public hearings. So, everything, even as it is local, as Alabama is saying, even if at the provincial level they have done public hearings, the National Council of Provinces still has to
conduct public hearings in order to cover all our sites.
Thank you very much.
Sir, I just want to make a comment on one thing, but I've got a question to the parliamentary legal advice. It relates substantially to the issue of consultation and the process. The bill is referred to the National House of Traditional Leaders. I can't remember that act precisely, but I think that act do have some specific time frame within which the traditional leaders must respond, and if they have not responded, it will be taken that they have responded, whatever. If you could get clarity on that, because I would be afraid, Chair, that we proceed with that process without that particular aspect being clarified. Only to come to a point that traditional leaders are saying, no, look, in terms of the act, we have got 30 days to respond to you. If you can get some authoritative explanation on that. On the second issue, Chairperson, I think it should be clear in our mind, it's not an issue of legal advisors, and I want to emphasize that. Political parties will decide and will determine. Political parties in provinces and everywhere, whether they are persuaded by new evidence or whatever, that's how parliament functions. It's a party political system. Persuaded by new evidence, new issues and whatever, to alter the fundamentals of the bill. I don't think we must be preemptive about that. But as for us in the community, there's nothing wrong. If we feel, yes, we are satisfied. But in provinces, they feel that, the particular issues were not adequately captured politically. These are the new considerations. There should be no bar that is put there to preempt those rights of political parties to reconsider their positions on the bill. I just want to make that comment. Thanks.
Interestingly, the judgment does not say this particular provinces must go back and do public hearings. It just says this act is remitted back to Parliament for Parliament to ensure that Section 72 and Section 11, the other section that relates to 118, that relates to provinces for public facilitation. For facilitation of public involvement. Should be done. So, to be honest, Chairperson, it is my view that all the provinces, whether provinces did do their public participation and they were identified, I would advise that should be started afresh and the public participation needs to be done properly. I'm not saying they were not done properly. I'm just saying that this will also cover our backs in great processes. Relating to the issue of new issues being raised in this public hearing, I would tend to agree with what Honorable Tsuna said and Honorable Kiliman. I would also, I know it's not my job to advise the committee, but I would advise that they should not pursue any new proposals that can be made in, or that can be submitted in those public hearings. Thank you.
Honorable members, I think we have done the best we can do. I will still carry out our statement.
I think that Mr. Donald, the issue was not important.
Yes.
The thing was just the out of the position. The legal advisors must have said that. Can we move on with this bill now? Or must we wait for that specific period of time before we can do anything on the bill? They must guide us.
Thank you, Lord, for having me.
Because I'm my prayer. Come.
The bill is within the Federal House, and the deduction on that, the Constant Mirage must deal with the bill. But I think we have to wait for that period of time to allow. And then if there's nothing that comes from the professional dealer, then the process can move forward. But if there's another thing, then it's just to be healthy.
Because we've got up to the 6th of February to finalize this. Yeah, some of the So we are done with the traditional health bill, and thank you very much for members' participation and the department's meeting. We are now going to go to the next one, for confirmation of pregnancy and MND, D21267. It's also section 7015. We'll be waiting for the copies from the parliamentary officer group. I think there's a delay. Oh, so just on time. They're just going to do without them, not on time. Just like this, we can do this to the copies. Thank you.
If there is a list available for those that we need in Target in the Western Cape, we will be able to come here. I think if there is a list for the specific groups that we need to target on public years, we will be doing the public years. The province of the NCOC. The NCOC is going to do the public years.
We have to be tracked as a
community,
but at least some and our mandate come from the legislature. Our legislature, by the one we have so we say sure and request legislature to put up its hearing in place. Mrs. Lamola. Honorable Lamola.
Thank you.
And Zalu. From the 2nd to the 6th of August, the government delegation is free the provinces of this city. And the public hearing will be from the 13th to the 17th of August. And we are also going to request the regional department of health to assist the provinces on this bill during the public hearing. We will just request that invitation. So the department sent the officials to 95 provinces. So we will get the attention to the assistance.
even with also requested members of parliament, I mean the permanent members, if possible, that will be during the provincial week. They'll be waiting probably also to assist or to attend those public hearings. So I think that information is very important and very are we all having the briefing document?
Yes.
We continue now, honorable members, with the next theme. Choice of termination of pregnancy amendment B, B21/27. Who's going to take us through this? Is it Jaruzo or? And also to give us a background as we begin the second part.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, maybe just to give a brief overview of the deal itself. That in fact new definition, one of the most important definitions is the definition of registeredness who has undergone flight training to persons who may perform COP. I'll speak to that later when we get into the substance of the deal itself. And then in clause two seeks to substitute section 3 of the current act, and that is places where COP may be performed. And these 10 requirements plus the approval of the MEC that is in the application that is made by facilities in order for them to perform TOP, they will have to conform to the 10 requirements, and then the MEC will be approving those facilities. Then there is an exception in clause 2. That exception relates to facilities that provide 24-hour maternity service, and if those facilities comply with the 10 requirements that I spoke about, that is only applicable for termination of pregnancy of 12 weeks or less. And the facility concerned must notify the MEC that is performing COPs. One of the main important issues to be considered in that particular issue is how the MEC or the provinces are going to ensure that those 24-hour maternity facilities do not flout the rules and provide COPs without any monitoring. Chairperson, reference hereby made to Chapter 6, Section 36.
Sorry, before that,
I was referring to Chapter 6, Section 36 of the National Health Act. One of the provisions of Section 36 says that Section 36 in Italia provides for needs to ensure the highest quality of health services rendered, and Section 47 of the National Health Act says that health establishments to comply with quality requirements and standards prescribed. So this 24-hour maternity facility will not be given carte blanche to perform termination of pregnancy without any monitoring or evaluation. In clause three is just a technical or consequential amendment, which says that the information that is available to the head of the facilities will then be submitted to the HOGs, who must then collect the information and submit it to the Director General of the National Department of Health. Clause 4 is also a consequential amendment. Currently, only the Minister and the DG are reflected in the current Act, so
in terms of the bill, the MEC will replace the minister and the HOD will replace the DG, and therefore it's important to delegate their powers to officials in their department. In terms of the current act, the minister is the only person who is responsible for regulations. Since we are now devolving the powers of the minister to the province, the MEC will be empowered or authorized to make regulations in consultation with the minister. The fact that those regulations are made in consultation with the minister is only to ensure consistency among the provinces. This is in a way meant to reserve the powers of the MEC. In clause 6 of the bill, deals with offences. In terms of the current act, a person who unlawfully performs COP or where this person allows COP to perform at a facility not approved or designated by the minister, it's not an offence in terms of the current act. So we have inserted a clause where it creates an offence for people who allow COP to be performed unlawfully, or people who allow access for performance of COP facilities not designated or approved by the MEC. Relating to the differences in the current situation and the bill, in terms of the current act, as I said, the registered midwife is the only person that is allowed to terminate pregnancies of 12 weeks or less. The bill suggests that we also include registered nurse with prescribed training. So it will not be just any other registered nurse, but this registered nurse, in addition to his or her qualification, will also have to have prescribed training that relates to performance of COP. And also the fact that the registered nurse is added as another person who can be consulted for termination of pregnancy after the 20th week. There are circumstances under which termination of pregnancy can be performed after the 20th week, so that can only be done by a medical practitioner who consults with another medical practitioner or a registered midwife. So we have added the registered nurse to also be another person that can be consulted in that regard. Currently, designation of facilities is only done by the minister. The application must conform with regulations that the minister has made, and the process is tedious and lengthy. So in terms of the new proposal, the MEC will be the person that approves designation of facilities, subject to the 10 requirements that have been listed therein. And the MEC, as I said, will have the power to make regulations relating to approval of facilities. So those 10 requirements that have been listed are requirements that the MEC can add on to, but cannot approve facilities that do not or that conform to requirements that are less than those that have been listed. The process will be short and efficient, as MECs will only deal with applications from that province only. In terms of the current situation, the provinces receive applications from applicants who desire to perform COPs, and those applications are then made to the National Department of Health for further processing, and then make submissions to the minister, and the process, as I said, is very lengthy and tedious. I have talked to the issue of inclusion of facilities that provide 24-hour maternity services, and also said that this will not be a carte blanche authority to facilities that provide 24-hour maternity services. Section 36 and Section 27 of the National Health Act will be invoked to ensure that those facilities conform to the standard minimum requirements as per the regulations in Section 47 and Section 36. Maybe just to say that Section 36 relates to primarily the certificate of need. Among those, will also be able to deal with issues of quality of health services standards, and Section 47 says that health establishments comply with quality requirements and standards of the drug.
This is in chapter 10 of the National Aspect Jefferson. There is a provision for Office of Standard Compliance and the Inspectorate. So those offices, those two offices, will monitor and enforce compliance with the quality requirements and standards. Second, there's a typographical error. It's not the decision being challenged, the decision fully challenged. I'm sorry about that. The certificate of need. And one other different, minor difference is that in terms of the current situation, as I said earlier, information is collected by the different heads of department, and then that information is then relayed to the national DG. So in terms of the new proposal, the HOD will be responsible for collecting information as opposed to information being kept by the DG, but rather it will be in the HOD's it will be the HOD's responsibility, who will, after collecting all the information, then transmit that information to the DG for record purposes. The MEC will provide the district on approved facilities to the minister. The next slide relates to in terms of the current situation, the minister is not, no, in fact, the new proposal is that as much as we are devolving the powers of the minister to the MEC, we are still saying that the minister is empowered to exercise powers of the MEC if nothing is done in that particular province. For instance, if regulations are not put into place to ensure that there is smooth processing of applications, or if the applications for COPs are not properly processed, then the minister is empowered to ensure that those provisions are properly implemented. Provincial regulations will be in accordance with national policy. I've made reference to Section 25 of the National Health Act, which provides for provincial heads of department to implement whatever policies in accordance with national policies. So this will be one of the things that they should be implementing in accordance with national policy. And where provinces have defined regulations, Section 46 of the Constitution may be invoked to ensure consistency. Section 146 relates to contradiction between or conflict between national legislation and provincial legislation. One of the things that should be taken into consideration is that national legislation will prevail over provincial if it is for the promotion of equal opportunity or equal access to government services, which include health services. And also, whatever the province is doing will be prejudicial to the health interests of the nation. One other difference is that the minister, in terms of the current situation, the minister makes regulation in this instance, or in the proposal, the MEC will be empowered to make their provincial regulations. I've also alluded to the creation of a new offence in terms of Section 10, that currently it's not an offence if TOP is performed at a facility not designated. It's a loophole that we thought we should close, that it will therefore be an offence to unlawfully allow termination at a facility not approved by the MEC, or for a person in charge of that facility to allow access for such services.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I don't want to raise something very controversial. And it also relates to the parliamentary procedures, Chairperson. Because if I go through the legislation, I notice that some of the things that I can simply say, they affect issues that relate to women. To what extent do committees, like this committee interacting with the committee on the genuine parent of the quality of life and the status of women, can actually also impact on public health? Why am I raising this type of thing? Now, if you go through the classified sections of the newspaper, you will notice that the issue of termination of pregnancy is now a gender issue. And quite a lot of clinics and even amateurs and whoever, they claim that they can actually perform the termination. And even times they learn. What extent can, even in the legislation, there be inclusion? I mean, in other words, this is meant for only women who can afford. What about poor women who can't actually afford such services? And you find if you like go to our public institutions, it's a long waiting list. And in some places, maybe more than that, it's 12 weeks, whereby the legislation says the person must actually be able to terminate. And some of them, the reasons that they leave for termination, they are not actually conforming to what the legislation actually says. So I'm trying to get that question. To what extent can the committee work together in opposing party sharing? Not only relying, of course, as the parliamentary organizers are actually indicating, you cannot necessarily rely on provinces to actually do the public hearings on your own. Also, as a committee, to what extent can you also do that? And number two, on that issue that I raised. Only in setting up within the legislation, our prices, the fees that must actually be charged to perform some of these. And also, when I go through the legislation, I don't see anywhere where it says the Department of Health must actually inspect this facility. It just sets guidelines, but no one can understand that these requirements that in order that the facility get a certificate or get approved. And consistent monitoring. When you talk about the DG having to, the MEC having to supply the statistics or the DG to the minister, but at the end of that, they don't necessarily respect the facilities to conduct the fact that given the type of services that are offered there, others now claim that we can terminate with a few. Others are claiming that they can terminate with other means. Even traditional dealers will come in now, what is doing that is taking, they can also say that they can also terminate. To what extent you also conform to say these are the types that can actually assist in terminating that person? You should not have to be controversial, they may not, may find that they may not even have answer for them now. But then also the NCOP, to what extent can you also make amendments in the legislation, not only rely on policy, make amendments to the legislation so that then it covers some of the things that we see that they are not necessarily covered within the legislation. Hello.
Thank you. Now, if this means we are going to introduce new issues that come from the public perception, but I just want to make an addition of the court where, because you get a lot of receipts from the same people, the same names, but the same people. Today I'm not sure, tomorrow I'm not going to go, tomorrow I'm not going to go. And doing the same thing, but they also get the provision. So how do we get the provision? When we do the public oversight, we get the provision. We've got a lot of resources, especially in the emergency. The next person is Honorable Laguna.
Mine is on the
Even the issue of the AGU, if you recall, there was a rule about that government is giving young children the right to go and terminate without even consulting their account. So some of the issues that is raising, they're actually contained in the principal legislation that is being amended. So I think we'll also assist him, the woman who gets pregnant, not the other way around. Maybe what God does it the other way around, then men will know how it feels like. And what makes a person actually go back and do a termination. Sometimes, this boyfriend or husband convinces her otherwise, let's make a baby, then he turned on her own. I think we know. Only when they discover what the man is not the chief. And then, otherwise, that's the guy. Let me stay away, instead of me raising this child, alone with his husband or boyfriend who is irresponsible, and then they decide to become there. But I'm not saying it justifies that. But then I'm saying the principal has been actually able to assist him of the child to understand some of the reasons why women will actually do other things for economic reasons. That's why I said I've discovered it's not a matter of good skills. People just make money out of good skills. Thank you.
The policy officers that were supposed to be here, Chairperson, because I've been involved in this field for some time, so I know a number of dynamics around the policy that involves this particular thing. And I will respond to most of the issues that have been raised by honorable members. The first issue that was raised by Honorable Member Masibuko, I think that was a comment directed at the Commission. The second one related to fees. Chairperson, the Department is currently in the process of drafting the NHPRL, National Health Price Reference List, which will be a guideline to the fees that must be charged by providers. It is a guideline, I must emphasize that, President. It is a guideline, and those guidelines are developed in terms of the National Health Act. Setting tariffs or determining fees or tariffs that must be set by providers in providing services. President, it borders very much on flouting the Competition Act. I'll give an example with the Dental Technicians Act, where the Council has the power to set fees relating to services that must be provided. We have recently been found by the Competition Commission to be promoting anti-competitive and uncompetitive behavior. So that will be set in the guide as a guideline, so that it will depend on the service providers as to how much they will charge, but we cannot set minimum or maximum tariffs because that, as I said, will be easily impugned by any person who wants to take us to the Competition Commission. And then with regard to the inspection of facilities, Chairperson, I must say that the department, though the process is very slow, we are in the process of developing regulations relating to certificate of need. I stated in my presentation that Section 36, one of the provisions of Section 36 is that it will provide for need to ensure the highest quality of health services rendered. So that will be one of the issues that will be prescribed in the regulation. And in terms of those regulations, we will be empowering what you call the Office of Standard Compliance and the Inspectorate in terms of the National Health Act, that is Section 47, Chapter 10 of the National Health Act, where these two offices will be empowered to inspect and monitor services that are being provided by the different health authorities. Among them will be the services that relate to termination of pregnancy. I do agree with honorable members that one aspect of our services that must be closely monitored. Maybe this is something that needs to be considered and specifically stated in those regulations. that one of the things that should be closely monitored is the issue of health related to feminism. Chairperson, relating to the concern that you also raised, that is the receipt of users from TOP, and it also links to what was raised by Honorable Member Lamura, relating to the register that he kept on TOP. Chairperson, as far as my knowledge says, I don't think there is a register except that the Act makes provision for keeping of the that people that are responsible for or they are managing health facilities that provide COP are responsible for keeping of statistics that must be then sent to the head of the different heads of department, and the head of department will then relay that information to the meeting. But with regard to the register, and in fact, one of the provisions of the Act is that in relaying that information, the name of the user must be excluded from the information that is being relayed to the EC. So, to be honest, Chairperson, I'm not sure, so sure about the register, but I know for a fact that statistics must be kept and sent through to the EC, to the head of department, and then to the EC. And with regard to the issue of registeredness being able to perform up TOP after 20 weeks, registered nurses will not perform termination of pregnancy after 20 weeks. They will only do termination of pregnancy after 12 weeks or less. In addition to that, that registered nurse must have prescribed training. The proposal that we have is that, in fact, let me say that for termination of pregnancy that is 20 weeks and above will only be done by a medical practitioner. But that medical practitioner must consult with another medical practitioner or midwife, so we have added a registered nurse. It's just a question of consultation, not the actual performance of the OP. And maybe for I'm referring you to the principal act. The principal act identifies three circumstances under which termination of pregnancy can be performed. That is in section 2. The first one says here, a pregnancy may be terminated upon request of a woman during the first 12 weeks of the gestation period. And then the second one says, from the 13th up to and including the 20th week, there are circumstances under which that termination of pregnancy can be performed. And also, that termination of pregnancy can only be performed by a medical practitioner after consultation with that pregnant woman. And only if the medical practitioner is of the opinion that the continued pregnancy would pose a risk of injury to the woman's physical or mental health, or there exists a substantial risk that the fetus would suffer from a severe physical or mental abnormality, or the pregnancy resulted from rape or incest, or the continued pregnancy would significantly affect the social or economic circumstances of the woman. I think this also talks to what Honorable Kizuna said. Mm. So the one that I want to respond to is C, which says, after the 20th week of gestation period, if a medical practitioner, after consultation with another medical practitioner or a registered midwife, so we are adding or a registered midwife or a registered nurse who has undergone that prescribed training, and then there are circumstances under which this particular TOP can be performed. And this is very tight, because after 20 weeks, we can only do termination of pregnancy if the pregnancy would endanger the woman's life, would result in a severe malformation of the fetus, or the pregnancy would pose a risk of injury to the fetus. So this does not concern social or economic circumstances of the woman. It's only those three that have been identified. I've responded to the issue of monitoring, who will be monitoring the services. And with regard to provision of regulation of private providers, Chairperson, to the best of my knowledge, the Act and what we are proposing in the bill is directed at both public and private facilities. So it's not a free-for-all situation. Both public and private facilities will be closely monitored, and their facilities will only be approved by the MECs to provide termination of pregnancy if they conform with the 10 requirements that have been dictated in the new section or the proposed section. Chairperson, I'm not sure if I have any issue that was raised by honorable members.
Thank you very much.
Chairperson, you will recall that there was a resolution in the House which we outlined the process that is supposed to unfold with regards to the reopening of this space. Yes, it is one of the line was this is the first response, the bill, since we don't have a process where the bill that is declared invalid by the Constitutional Court, how to follow that process. So it was taken that the bills, as they are, since the extensive work has been done, can be then be referred to the Federal Committee on Social Services as a basis. But that doesn't preclude, for instance, the rule does allow, for instance, for the Federal Committee to confer with another committee of Parliament. Is there in the rules, the Secretary can do that, he can facilitate that process for conferral, so that you undertake that work to together. And the other thing, Chairperson, while I'm still on the platform, I've just noticed for sense in this bill that as they are introduced, it is still proposed as Section 76. For instance, even the previous one is proposed as Section 76. Is that still a proposal, Chairperson? It has not been tagged yet. That's one thing that I want members just to know. It has not been tagged yet. There's a joint tagging mechanism where they sit together with the presiding officers and tag the bill. So what it means, the bill has not yet been referred. If I will go back to that issue of the National House of Traditional Leaders, the bill has not yet been referred there. Until it is tagged, then the Secretary to Parliament must refer. So since if it was tagged today, then the Secretary referred to that house. Then the 30 days, it kicks in from tomorrow. We start that 30 days. But another issue that I want to elaborate on, I think members took it very clear from my colleague, Professor Federal Officer. During that process of 30 days, that doesn't preclude the committee to consider the bill. But what it precludes, it precludes the House where the bill was introducing to pass the bill before that 30 days, if you can get that thing. But the committee can proceed with its work. But at the plenary level, then we are precluded from passing the bill if that 30 days does not lapse. But the committee must continue with its job. But only the House cannot pass that bill unless the 30 days has elapsed. So that is just the distinction that I want to make between the committee and the House. I just wish members that are clear on that.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. The National House of Traditional Leaders.
Now, is this not going to give us a problem if the bill is not being checked now? The chairperson has just
told us that we must go and do briefing in different programs. At the same time, we must go and do briefing in the check. Is that going to give us problems, or what is it going to happen? Because provinces operate according to their rules. We differ from province to province.
No, I think I'm covered by the question of my galaxy saying, but then you know what should I be? I want to find out. Then why are they bringing the decision to committee when they are not yet checked? What if this person and this now changes to something else? Level which man is the disciple, then I have a we are going to do this future, we propose that we must bring checks to the situation to us. So then, you know, what it is that we are dealing with. So that looks to them that, you know, it's like we are doing the work, but we are still waiting for somebody to decide somewhere if our inland is what we are doing. I think what Mama Madara is saying is true. Provinces work with rules. And after we are done with this today, it means it cannot even be sent to my province to obtain. We can't keep it there or kick it and say we are waiting for the official checking
I think KGB was correct, you know, to deny the public certain information, you know. Maybe they were correct. Because my last thing is that you're not dealing with a new bill today. You're dealing with a bill that is going to Parliament. And your experience at all, whereby, for instance, the bill normally comes from the department. In his introduction, he said it's a new experience whereby a bill has been started from Parliament. Now, officially, the JMT, when taking the term JMT, taking the time, has not, you know, had this thing or put it step up on this thing. Eh? But there is on rare occasion where joint taking is just a matter of operation and practice. Eh? It will come with a different setting from what the parliamentary legal advisor is rare. And I am saying comrades all of with all evidence before us, there is nothing, not even an inch, that really can put us on the point that the taking next year can help. No. I mean, that is my take really on it. The issue for me was, let's start with the process, because the plan is February. And you know what is happening in February. All of us, I mean, I don't have to remind all of our members. But I don't take the point that Honorable Manari said, particularly Gauteng is, you know, very, very, very stringent with their rules. Maybe what we should say is that we must establish and we must report to the chairperson. Where is the DMT? What are precise what are things with the DMT process, blah, 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 blah. But I don't think it will also be procedurally planned for them to refer this bill officially to provinces without getting finalized that particular stage. Yeah. So I think your concern will be covered at that level.
Yeah, but I think it's in actual fact I am supporting what Sotona is saying because it's a procedural issue and it's just now for the presiding officer to check the bill and then the process can run from there.
Mm-hmm.
Chairperson, I wish I'm not taking out of the context. My explanation with the trading mechanism only related when I'm trying to explain to members the 30 days referral to the National Council of Provinces, to the National House of Traditional Leaders, and then not to the provinces. That is the other issue that members can raise all together. I was trying just to illustrate to members how the process of counting the 30 days and how it's supposed to unfold and all those things. But if I may just come to the thing, the taking, we can deal with the taking about after 30 days, after only within 30 days, within 2 days after the bill has been introduced. So the joint taking mechanism is from today until Thursday, in which to take the bill. You take only 2 days, then it takes. And as Mr. Fitona has just said, that most of the joint taking mechanism is, of course, the presiding officers together with the senior or chief parliamentary local. So it's only on rare position, because it is then every bill that is introduced separately is just is to assist the joint taking mechanism. They say they are of the opinion. It's an opinion. Who decides is a joint taking mechanism? They decide on the opinion that is even offered by the parliamentary law advisors, or if it's introduced by the department, they depend on the state law advisors on their opinion. Then they decide. They confirm most of the time, Chairperson, they confirm the taking by the state law advisors or by the parliamentary law advisors. That is why we allow for people, if any person has, for instance, a submission to make to the joint taking mechanism, to the joint taking mechanism on the proper taking of the bill, just to do it, and then after that thing, they confirm the taking and the bill is referred. What I was doing with that, it was only the 30 days, how it started to count, for instance, after it has been taken and referred by the secretary, then it starts the following day of referral by the secretary, the 30 days start to count. What I was trying to elaborate to members is just to clarify the misconception that was going to go here, that you should wait until 30 days has elapsed, then to start with the bill. I was trying to tell the committee, no, that is not what it says. It says the House, it has to wait for that 30 days to lapse before the House can pass the bill. So the committee must continue to do their work in regard to this bill.
If I can just sit for a minute and just to confirm what they say, is that normally what happens at the joint planning mechanism is that they look at the substance of the bill, and the bill deals either with cultural matters or with the health matters in the instance of the termination of pregnancy issues. So those will be the issues that guide the tagging mechanism with tagging as a bill. So if it's a 76 tag or preferred as a 76 bill, those will be the issues that the tagging mechanism will look at. And this will obviously be taken into account when the mechanism decides on the tagging of the bill. So I don't doubt that there would be a problem with the 76 tagging of both the bills. So just to confirm what everybody has said, that that shouldn't be something that must keep the committee from continuing their work. Also with regard to the issue of the traditional leaders council, just to confirm that this house may continue in the meantime, because the rule is quite clear on that aspect, that if the council must give their input within 30 days, but the national council cannot pass the bill unless the council has given their input into the bill. So the council may continue with the bill, but the council must just keep their input within 30 days after being notified. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. I'm sure we have time on this topic. So I'm going to deal with them. In my chairmanship, even to bring the problems on this thing. Let me take this opportunity to thank the department. My members have to remain behind for another process of adoption of many. For 5 sets of the minutes to be adopted, and
think the land should be ready. I have to apologize to the house that you're not going to do a city lunch. It will be a single lunch because all the restaurants are busy. Just around the corner here at 35. Can we, do we have all the members that were maybe part of the
lunch?
Yes, our guests, our partners are invited for lunch, and special delegates, so we can stay over and welcome. But the finger line is just around the corner. And finger line is in the lunch, so we can on. Remember, those are still behind. Thank you very much. Thank you. For the best of the provinces, we'll assist the provinces, then we'll come up with